Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
It is winner take all time in the NBA and NHL, and FanDuel is giving you a shot to bring home a big win of your own. Because right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $150 to bet on spreads, money lines, player props, and more. Just visit FanDuel.com/247, make every playoff shot count. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hello and welcome in to the Fog.net podcast. My name is Michael Swain, the Kansas beat writer for 24/7 Sports. And today and every post-game for KU football going forward, I will be joined by Kevin Flaherty, who covers Kansas a little bit for us, but also does a lot of more national college football and college basketball writing for 24/7 Sports. Kevin, how has the start of your Saturday morning been so far?
You know, it's been pretty great. It feels, you know, like week zero is always, you know, just sort of that whet your appetite a little bit, like college football hasn't really started. But no, this week you get the full Thursday slate of games, you get the Friday slate of games, you get college game day and all the different pregame shows and everything. And then you get some huge games today. I mean, you get like Ohio State, Notre Dame and some stuff like that. So honestly, from a college football standpoint and everything else, I'm not sure I could be any happier. How about you?
I'm pumped. It feels like college football season. As I was writing some post-game stuff, like 30 minutes ago, I had college game day on in the background, and it just feels like it. And I love the Thursday slate. That was so much fun watching West Virginia and Pitt. I even caught a little bit of the Purdue Penn State game, and that was a good appetizer for what we saw last night. I was, you know, for KU beating Tennessee Tech 56-10 last night. I was up in the press box. Kevin, you were down in Memorial Stadium there as a supporter. I want to start here. I'm curious for you, what was kind of the game day atmosphere like for you? Kind of the first true, real kind of post-COVID kind of setup for KU in terms of the tailgating and everything. So what was kind of your takeaway and what was the experience like for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I thought the game day experience was really cool. You know, I remember walking around before the game with my college roommate. Actually, we attended the game together and was just kind of walking the hill and seeing all the different tailgates and everything. You know, burgers and brats were in the air and all of that. But also, you know, when we were walking over by the football complex, you know, Travis Goff walked by, the Kansas athletic director, and he had, you know, just ear to ear smile, I think, from the energy and everything that you saw there. And then once you got in the stadium, it was a pretty good crowd. You know, it was a pretty good sized crowd. It was a very energetic crowd. You know, I think a lot of fans were excited. It was kind of funny, you know, leaving after the game, some of the conversations that you just kind of tend to overhear, you know, hey, we're going bowling. Hey, you know, whatever else. And so it was a really cool kind of experience. And I know from an attendance standpoint, Michael, that was pretty strong, I feel like, for a Kansas opener.
It was. And it wasn't necessarily a crowd that got there, you know, 15 minutes before kick. It was a lot of it, you know, I think by probably the second drive of the game. Yep. When the stadium kind of hit its fullest, but the announced attendance was 34,902. And that's the largest crowd KU's had in a season opener since 2014. So you're looking at, you know, 8 years, almost, you know, getting close to a decade in terms of, you know, precedence. So I thought that was really good. I thought that in general, the crowd made a lot of noise, and I think that's positive. I think as game week kind of progressed, you heard maybe a little bit more and more about, all right, you know, the crowd might be pretty good this weekend. You know, you never really know what necessarily that means, given, you know, it's a holiday weekend. Maybe people are going out of town. It's not really a great opponent. But I thought overall it was really good, and overreactions are fun after the first game of the season. I've loved, you know, message board and Twitter and all of it. And I'm sure we'll get to some of those overreaction questions a little bit later on. But I want to start here with you, Kevin. Going to the first quarter, I personally don't think you could have asked for a better first quarter from Kansas. Like, they came out of the blocks playing really, really well. And I just don't think that's been the case in some of these season openers in the past. Obviously, last year's a little bit of a different situation, considering the fact that the coaching staff didn't really get a spring and it was a much more challenging start. But even going back to Les Miles' time, David Beatty for sure, you know, these FCS teams have given KU some issues, and that just wasn't the case on Friday night.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, because, you know, what's that old coaching cliche? Basically, you know, don't let them hang around. They'll start to believe they can play with you.
Yeah.
And Kansas comes out, you get the three and out right away. You go down, score a touchdown. You get another three and out, you score a touchdown. And so, you know, to have that kind of start, and I felt like, you know, it was the sort of thing you really wanted to see, I think, as much as anything. You know, we had talked a little bit before the game about how the important thing was, hey, you want to win and you want to stay healthy. Yeah. But at the same time, those were the needs, so to speak. The wants, I feel like you wanted to play well up front. You really wanted it to look like, hey, we're playing an FCS team and we are better than they are. And we are better than they are up front. And I think that was really one of the things that stood out about this game. And we knew Tennessee Tech was not a South Dakota, right? Like, even with that. FCS, like, Tennessee Tech is not a great FCS team. I think they were 5-6 last year. And so when you look at that, it's a game that you would hope that Kansas would go in and sort of establish its dominance. But this is also a team that, you know, Kansas was favored to beat by, what, 28, 30 points was the line right around there. And so if you just look at, hey, the line is the expectation, if you clear it or whatever, then Kansas had a really strong outing.
Yeah, and I think a couple good points there. I think for me, the defensive line, the way that group started the game was really good, because obviously I wrote about it on the website and we talked about it on the podcast too, but they've had some scheme changes, and it was good to see that from the get-go, the guys were kind of getting it. You know, you get off the ball, you get up the field, and there were some gaps there, I think, in the run game as the game progressed. But I think from the start, you just saw it. And I got the tackle for loss numbers here. 12 total tackles for loss, 5 sacks from that defensive line group. I think that's a really good start. Of course, you take into account the competition, but you have to take care of business. And I thought that was huge. For me, let's talk about Lonnie Phelps. That was fun. That was reminiscent of a Dorrance Armstrong type of, I'm going to come out and kind of dominate. Now, it took him a little while to get going, right? He wasn't super impactful in the first quarter. I think he had 2 tackles, but then all of a sudden there, second quarter, you know, Nathan Swaffer, our staff writer, wrote about it, but Jim Panikos kind of gave him a tip on the sideline, like, hey, tweak this and you'll be able to get going. And sure enough, he did. And man, he's fun to watch. Like, that was the first game getting to see him, and like, man, he's a good player.
Well, and I thought it was interesting. One of the things that schematically you and I have talked about on the podcast is the fact that Lonnie Phelps was really effective at Miami, Ohio in 2-man game. You know, when you would twist him with a defensive tackle, when you would slant him inside and do different things like that. I think one of the things that I wanted to see was, one, would they run some of that? They did. Mm-hmm. But two, the other thing that I wanted to see was, hey, when he's just lined up and flat going against the tackle, is he going to win that way too? Do you have to scheme a win for him, or is he going to win on his own? And again, like you said, it is Tennessee Tech. And we'll probably say that phrase, it's Tennessee Tech, about 34,000, you know, more times. But at the same time, he won those battles. You know, when he was going one-on-one with the tackle, he was either getting the edge or he was forcing the tackle upfield enough to where he could push back inside. And I thought that was a really encouraging part. you talked about the tackles for loss and especially the play early. I thought the defensive tackles were outstanding. Mm-hmm. And I thought the number of times, it's not necessarily the easiest spot to play against a team that runs so much option. And I thought the number of times Tennessee Tech handed the ball off and the running back was having to make a move, you know, 2 or 3 yards deep in the backfield, well, it was pretty high. And I thought, you know, Lonnie Phelps had this terrific performance. I think the other guy that really stood out to me, I mean, Jeremy Robinson played well, but the other guy that jumped out to me was, we've talked about Caleb Sampson potentially having that all Big 12 potential in a defense where he can get upfield, where he can be a one gap guy. What did you see from Caleb Sampson from your viewpoint?
I thought he was good. I mean, if you're going to rank kind of the defensive tackles, you know, I think Eddie Wilson and Caleb Taylor were up top, but I think Caleb Sampson had a really good game. And he's one of these guys that is just kind of quiet. You know, he's not one of these rah-rah, you know, type of players where you notice him celebrating a bunch like Lonnie Phelps was, but he's one of these guys that just kind of quietly puts together some solid performances. I thought he was really good. I think you go to the second level. Those linebackers were fun to watch. I'm going to have to highlight this at some point, but they were putting Craig Young in space a lot. And I thought that was really interesting because I was curious of kind of what the alignment would look like. Obviously Craig Young played safety at Ohio State and now plays linebacker, playing that strong side linebacker spot. I thought he was good. I thought Tywin Berryhill was good. I thought Rich Miller was good. Eric Gilliard got an interception. Like, who would have thought that Eric Gilliard, the guy who is tabbed as a good run stopper, but not maybe the best in passing coverage, is the guy that gets KU's first interception. I thought the front seven in general was very dominant. And I'd say it again, the level of competition, but sure. I think the cohesiveness that you saw from that unit was really, really encouraging. And of course you have a good test next week against West Virginia, but I think just to have that type of production, have that type of performance, the way they were rotating guys. I mean, Kevin, there are times where, like, you know, obviously mid drive they'll do it, but it seemed like guys would get two plays and then come out and then two plays and come out. Like, they were rotating a ton, and the players post game seemed to really like that, how they could just go all out for however many snaps they could. And then when they needed a rest, they tapped their helmet. And the way they did it was Panagos was on the sideline. Taiwo Onatolu, the defensive ends coach, was up in the box and they'd rotate him out. I thought it was really interesting. Like, rotation wise, like, what'd you see? Because I'm sure as a fan watching it, maybe looks a little bit different than when you're up in the press box and you're on the same sideline.
Sure. Yeah. I think that was actually something that I really noticed too. And it's funny because on one hand, we talk about it and say, oh, you won 56-10 against Tennessee Tech. I think the other thing that I would note is that Kansas rotated heavily throughout, starting in the first quarter, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they won't rotate against other teams, but I feel like the level of rotation, you know, could Kansas have won this game and put up 70 or 77 points? Yeah, probably. But I also think that it was more worth it for Kansas to get certain guys out there and get them reps, you know, in deciding moments, you know, when the game wasn't 100% out of hand or things like that. And I thought that was an interesting thing, just to see the way that all of those guys rolled through. And it's funny, you know, you look out there at certain times in the third and fourth quarters, and, you know, Eric Gilliard has come off the bench, and, you know, Lorenzo McCaskill is out there, and you say, this isn't like it was last year, you know, with the depth, you know, the way they were able to rotate through at the corner spots, you know, at safety, you know, you had Jarrett Paul making, you know, all these great plays, you know, in the second half and everything after, you know, I thought OJ Burrows had a quietly very good game. He's a fireman, right? Like he's, mm-hmm. but he's like a premature fireman. Like, he puts out the fire before it starts. And so, you know, I thought, you know, that was something that stood out to me, but you could look pretty much at every position on that defense, and they did rotate guys offensively as well. And I'm sure we'll get to a certain position in particular here in a minute, but you look at the way that they were able to rotate guys through defensively, and it had to be so encouraging to have guys at all these different levels of the defense rotate through and find success.
100%. And I'm going to use this time to segue as we go to the offense. This was a dominant performance.
Yep.
And had that touchdown not happened, you're looking at KU's biggest margin of victory, the last Tennessee Tech touchdown to get them to 10 points. You're looking at KU's largest margin of victory since they joined the Big 12. That's what I spent so much time of the in the fourth quarter, like looking up the greatest margins of victory. And I had to go back all the way to 1996. And even further back, I was still kind of looking. And then all of a sudden they scored. And it's like, well, we'll have to do this again. But a few game notes here. The 56 points, most scored in a season opener since when, Kevin? When do you think?
I think they just missed against Central Michigan. Oh, gosh. In 2007. I think they had like 52 in that game.
Close. You have to go back 100 years.
Is it really?
You have to go back to 1912 when KU shut out St. Mary's 62-0. I did not know that.
That was a barn burner, I assure you.
Yeah, I wish I knew. and then you go down the list, right? 56 points, most scored at home since that Nebraska game when KU scored 76 points back in 2007. Overall dominant performance. Offensively, let's save the running backs because we'll get to that in the questions that we have.
Sure.
Let's go with Jalen Daniels first. I wrote about this heading into the game that he's the guy that I was most interested to watch offensively because a lot of these games for Kansas early on are winnable. First 6 weeks of the season are when a lot of your winnable games happen. You cannot have a slow start from your quarterback, particularly when you go on the road two out of the first 3 weeks of the season. And I thought that Jalen Daniels was awesome. Awesome. First half, I think 14 to 15 total, you know, didn't really put the ball in jeopardy, made a lot of really good throws. I thought a couple of them where he extended the play with his legs and then was able to complete passes. I think got one to Luke Grimm. I think he obviously had the one to Quentin Skinner. That was Skinner's first reception as a Jayhawk. Pretty cool moment for him, 56 yards. I thought Jalen Daniels was awesome overall. And the interception, talked to him post-game, he was kind of like, yeah, I got a little confident, was, you know, trying to force it in and didn't think that the linebacker was going to be there, and he was, but he kind of seemed like it was one of those where he kind of knew it was a risky throw and still was like, ah, I can do it. But overall, Kevin, for you, like, what'd you think of Jalen Daniels? Because I was very impressed.
Yeah, because I think Jalen Daniels, you know, we all know about the talent level, you know, right? He's got a terrific arm. I mean, when you look at the best throws that KU quarterbacks have made in recent memory, you know, a high number of them belong to Jalen Daniels. I mean, he's got that arm talent, and he's mobile, and he's tough, and all of those things. I think what I wanted to see, and I believe you're right there with me, is the polish, right? Mm-hmm. Because you think of Jalen as a gunslinger, like a guy that hangs in until the last minute, you know, has a helmet under his chin and, you know, puts the ball out there. And I thought one of the things that was most impressive about him was the polish and the poise that he played with. Like you said, mm-hmm. he didn't put the ball in jeopardy until that throw. You know, you look at, I think the 14 of 15, I think the only incompletion was that sort of back shoulder fade where, you know, he put the ball in the receiver's hands on that fourth
down. Yeah, the fourth down.
And so, you know, it wasn't like you could blame that, you know, on a bad pass. Like, he gave his guy a chance to catch it. And so when you look at how polished he was, when you looked at the decisions he made, and it's kind of funny too, the pass to Skinner, right? So it was like a little bootleg, mm-hmm. and the tight end breaks into the clear. And I was like, he's got his tight end for like a real nice little, you know, 6 or 8 yard gain there. And he pulled up and went back. And I was thinking, okay, like, what else does he see? And then you see Quentin Skinner break clear by 5 yards and he hits him deep. And I think that's the part that he brings that a lot of other Kansas quarterbacks don't, right? Like, even some of the ones that have been effective, they take that little dump off to the tight end and you know, say, hey, you know, that's an 8 yard completion. That's a positive play, et cetera. Jalen Daniels gives you a chance to be explosive. And within that, if he's also protecting the ball and also being accurate and also playing with poise, I really think the sky is the limit for that kid. I really do.
Yeah, I love that throw is awesome. And from my, you know, I like the press box because you get kind of the all 22 look of it. And, you know, I saw Jalen Daniels go back and kind of rear back like he's going to throw it. And I thought he was going to try and force it into Lawrence Arnold on kind of the near side if you're watching on the TV broadcast. And then all of a sudden you kind of see a guy breaking free and you're kind of like, who is that? And it's like, oh, it's Quentin Skinner, the guy that all camp, everyone's like, that's exactly what he does.
Yep.
Like that's what everyone talked about was he's the guy that can break the top off the defense, man. He's I think Andy Kornacki called him a grass chewer because of the way he just eats up strides and can eat up ground. And I'm just super impressed by him. I think that that's a huge development if he can be someone that provides that deep threat for you, because you look at the other guys, right? Like Lawrence Arnold, more of a 50-50 guy, better as a possession receiver almost. Luke Grimm's a really good guy in the slot, really good route runner. But you don't really have a guy that's going to take the top off the defense, especially with Trevor Wilson suspended indefinitely. And so for Quentin Skinner to do that, I thought was really huge. And then obviously someone like Kevin Terry showing up as well. He was someone that, you know, this time last year was kind of getting some buzz in camp, but got hurt and didn't really play. He had two catches, I want to say. Those were his first two college catches as well. So you've got multiple guys now that in the first game of the season showed they can do it. Now, be very interested to see, can they get open against Big 12 cornerbacks and Power 5 cornerbacks in general, because you basically have, you know, 11 Power 5 games left this season. I thought the wide receiver room probably surpassed my expectations a little bit. I just didn't really know what to expect. And we're not even talking about Doug Emelian, who played a little bit more in the second half, not as much in the first half. But wide receiver-wise, what'd you think? And we'll blend that in and talk about the tight ends too.
Sure. Yeah, I think that when you looked at with the way the coaches were talking about the receiver room, right, was we don't have a wide receiver one at this point. We don't have, you know, a Dez Briscoe type guy that, hey, you know, this guy is going to, you know, go out and catch seven passes for 100 yards on a given thing. But they said this group can be really effective if guys make the most of the opportunities that they get. And I thought from that perspective, it was really encouraging, you know, on big downs, even when they had third downs, you had guys, you know, getting open by a pretty significant margin. And like you said, it's going to be different against Big 12 competition. It is. But I think the thing that you look at is when you're looking at what you want to see from Tennessee Tech, like, I think the main takeaway I have from the game in general, and this relates to wide receivers, is Kansas did what it was supposed to against Tennessee Tech. And I know that sounds like it doesn't sound satisfying, right? Like you're not saying, oh, it was brilliant or whatever, you know, but that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a good way. Like that's a positive. Like Kansas hasn't typically done what it's supposed to do in those situations. And so when you looked at that, and I felt like the wide receivers did what they were supposed to do in that situation. When it was, say, a third and eight, you'd have a guy breaking open across the middle of the field and presenting Jalen Daniels with a really nice target to find for a big completion. When they wanted to go over the top, you had Quentin Skinner getting open over the top. When even on the goal line fade that they threw, and you know,
you can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
A very bright, shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
That was an interesting play call, I thought.
Bennett.
I'm not I'm not a goal line fake guy on fourth down, because I feel like if your wide receiver is good, he maybe gives you a little bit better than 50-50 chance to get that. And I feel like you have to have a play in your playbook that's better than 50-50 chance to get 2 yards.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyways, if you're going to throw the fade, it was well thrown. The receiver made a good play on the ball. Was it Arnold that made the play on that?
Yeah, it was.
He made a good play on it. He didn't quite come down with it, but he did what he was supposed to do. And so I think when you look at those, there's a lot of encouraging moments. Tight end was kind of fun, because I thought the number one thing for those guys, and I feel like people forget this, is you got to block, right? Yeah. Like KU wants to run the ball, like first and foremost, and that is going to set up the other things. And I thought they had a good game blocking. I thought Jared Casey on the Devin Neal touchdown run, you know, had a terrific sort of blocks and seal off there. Mason Fairchild didn't have a bad game blocking the ball or blocking, caught a pass. They didn't use the tight ends a whole lot in the passing game. I would expect that to change, you know, when you look forward into the schedule. I think if you were going to ask me with that pass catching group, like what's the adjustment moving forward, I would guess that the receivers are going to have a little bit harder time getting open. And I think that the tight ends are going to start getting utilized more in part because of that. What did you think of that tight end group as well?
Yeah, you hit on Jared Casey. He picked up where he left off of last year. Not necessarily in the passing game, but in terms of helping KU open running lanes. Like there were so many plays where he was taking out a defensive end, someone at the second level. Like I thought he was really, really good. And that's positive, because I wasn't convinced by what I saw from Tavita Noah. I thought he got thrown around a little bit out there, which isn't great for someone that looks like more of an offensive lineman than a tight end. That was interesting. Trevor Cardell didn't play much. I was just looking as you were talking there, and he's on the participation report. So he played. I just didn't see him out there that much. So that'll be something I'll have to ask about this week. All right. It is time.
All right.
To talk about the most fun topic of all. And we'll get into some of our questions here now. I want to start with one that I got. I'm going to shorten the question a little bit, but the person was concerned about Devin Neal's lack of carries. And let me pull it up right here next to me. This is just a crazy stat line to look at. 4 carries,
yep.
108 yards, 2 touchdowns. it's just funny to look at that. The gist of the question is, do you read into Devin Neal's lack of carries, and is this something that's going to keep up? And let's just specifically talk about Devin Neal, because we'll get to the rest of the group in a second, because there's a lot to digest. But with Devin Neal, are you reading into his lack of carries yesterday?
I don't think so. And we'll get into some of this on the next one too. But I think, you know, they didn't need to give Devin Neal a lot of carries. You know, Devin was really effective with the carries he got. And even beyond that, you know, you were winning by a significant margin. And so I don't think you read anything into it. He started the game. He and Kai Thomas were both out there in that diamond formation. Tory Loughlin too, right?
Yeah, like
Tory
Loughlin
was the third back in that little diamond that they came out in. But he started the game. You know, he was effective out there. I don't think you really draw too many conclusions about that moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. It's early in the season, and the last thing you want to do is give your star running back 20 carries against a team that isn't good. Like, that's just, you don't want to add an unnecessary wear to a player at a position that takes a lot of wear, regardless of what happens. So I don't read into it. I also got asked if they should redshirt him. No. You don't redshirt running backs, really. Like, if they're good enough, they'll play. It's like Puka, right? You don't redshirt Puka. Like, you don't redshirt Devin Neal. You don't. Like, the reason that a lot of these guys redshirted in the past, like someone like Savion Morrison, someone like Kai Thomas, is because they were that programs that had a Devin Neal, right? With the guy that was going to take a lot of the carries. Daniel Hyshaw redshirted because he got hurt. Like, so I don't see that happening. Now let's get to the rest of the running back carries. Sure. I'll read this off to you real quick. So Savion Morrison got the most carries with 8. Yep. Then Daniel Hyshaw with 5, and those might be the most electric 5 carries I've ever seen. And then you had Devin Neal with 4. Oh, Kai Thomas had 7, under Sevion Morrison. He's a little further down because he didn't gain as many yards. But so, yeah, right now it's Morrison with the most, then Thomas, then Daniel Hyshaw, then Neal, and then Lachlan. So overall, looking forward, like, do you expect it to be this spread out? Like, what do you think?
I think they'd like to ride the hot hand to some extent, mm-hmm. but I also think that that hot hand a lot of times is going to be Devin Neal. And I think that when you look at a game like last night's, if it happened this next week, let's say against West Virginia, they're not going to cut Devin Neal off at four carries if he's got 108 yards on those four carries. He is the hot hand at that point, and so he's going to continue to get the ball. They're going to keep them all fresh, but I also think that, yeah, there could be some games where maybe Daniel Hyshaw has 11 carries. There might be some where he has four because maybe Savion's having a little bit more success. I think with Ty Thomas, the frustrating thing was, for whatever reason, his carries weren't especially well blocked. He was he was not getting the opportunity, I feel like, that some of the other guys were. And I thought Thomas was really impressive in those carries for getting as much as he did, you know, with the blocking that he had on those plays. And I would expect, I thought that was why Thomas wound up with seven, was sort of even near the end of the game, they were kind of like, okay, let's get him another carry or two. Let's find him something positive to build on it. And I felt like that was kind of a theme of last night's game, was that they wanted to give each guy something positive, and they wanted to have everybody operating at a certain level. And Devin Neal was that guy, you know, from the start. And so you could say, okay, Devin's playing well, let's give those carries to someone else. Mm-hmm. How do you see the running back carries kind of shaking out as we go into West Virginia and maybe even down the season?
Yeah, I think it'd be similar to that. You ride the hot hand. What I thought was interesting is the way they did it. This wasn't, all right, Devin gets a carry, and then Sevion gets a carry, and then Daniel gets a carry. It was, all right, this is Devin Neal's drive. All right, this is Sevion's drive. And they'll come out for a play or two because you don't want them on the field, you know, all whatever, 7-8 plays of a drive. But I thought that was really interesting, the way that they went about managing that. And that's something that Daniel Hyshaw said after the game, was that something that they've kind of worked on, is that you're going to get in a rhythm over the course of a drive. You're going to get your first two carries, you know, feel it out. And then, you know, then they'll take you out for the next drive and make sure that you're fresh for when you come back in, for whenever that next drive happens to be. I want to give a shout out to Daniel Hyshaw. Like,
He took two lives.
It's great. And I asked him about it. I asked him about, so for those who didn't see, on his first touchdown run, he scores, takes like three steps, then just goes and hits an opposing Tennessee Tech player and just hits him. Like, usually you'll see like a defensive back come in and try and hit a running back late or a wide receiver late. It was the opposite. Like, he went out of his way to go crack somebody. I asked him about that. He was like, yeah, I was tired of hitting my teammates. I wanted to hit other people. And then later in the game, right, he's on the far sideline and just tries to truck somebody. Like, I love that. I'm here for that because I just – the physicality. And I think that's a lot of what Lance Leipold wants his team to be, is a physical, tough team. And I think Daniel Hyshaw exemplifies it. So, I had so much fun watching him. And I love the three running back set too. You're going to see a lot more of that. I'm very confident of that. I'm interested that they only did that once to start the game. I thought that was
funny. I think they came out with it in the second half.
Did they?
Once too, yeah.
Okay. I thought that was sending a message that we're going to do this, and you're going to see that a lot. And they're going to have some creative stuff off of that too. And that's all I can actually say about that. But all right, let's move on. Another question here is, if Key play like that against a Power 5 team, what would the result have been? And this comes from at KU Tracker on Twitter. And we had so many Devin Neal and running backs questions that I can't really give one person a shout out for it. But how do you think this game was shaken out if this was a, let's say, Duke?
You know, against a team like Duke, I think last night's performance might have been good enough to win that game by a touchdown, maybe a little more. And I know some people are like, oh my gosh, like what's, but I think when you're playing against teams of similar, or, you know, if we even say what happens if they did it against Texas Tech or whatever, you know, or better talent level, a lot of the little mistakes add up, right? Like you block a guy, but maybe your angle isn't quite right. And it didn't matter as much last night. And so that helps. And to be fair, like Kansas is going to get significantly better. When Kansas plays Duke here in a few weeks, Kansas will be better than it is right now. And I thought, you know, one of the really good things about the game was, like we said, they won, they were healthy. The other thing is I thought there were some teachable moments. You know, I thought when you look at like the Kai Thomas runs that we were talking about where maybe the blocking wasn't quite there, it wasn't like it was a jailbreak, right? Like it was, you know, one or two guys not quite getting where they needed to be or not quite getting the angle right or whatever else. And I think that's instructive because it's not like they got blown off the ball, but those are the things that add up when you're playing against teams that have a bigger competition level. I do think Kansas is better than Duke, and Duke played Temple last night. I think won 30-0. Is that right?
Yep.
And so when you look at those two teams together, I do think Kansas is better than Duke. But at the same time, I think with the way the offense played last night, and I know this is going to sound crazy to some people, it was probably a B-minus game from an execution standpoint. It wasn't an A game in terms of, hey, you know, if you played like this against Oklahoma, you're still going to move the ball because you're executing so well, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I consider an A game is basically – hey, the other team's out here, but it really doesn't matter because we're doing what we're supposed to do. And I don't think they hit that. And so I think if you put them against a Power Five team the way they played, I thought the defense was pretty good. There were, you know, a couple little missed assignments here and there. It's tough to tell with the defense, I think, Michael, because you're playing an option team that you overmatch, you know, physically, and they played their assignments well, but I'm just saying a lot of opponents are going to present different kinds of challenges than what that Tennessee Tech did. When you play Texas Tech, they're going to put the ball in the air 55 times. And we didn't get a clue yesterday, really, as to what KU's defense will look like against a team that's going to put the ball in the air 55 times.
Yeah, we'll hit on West Virginia at the end, but that'll be a good test for the defensive backs group as a whole. Offensively, you know, I think this is if the game play like this against Duke, they'd be in the game. And I think they'd have a really good shot of winning it. And that's all you can ask for. And again, like you said, they're going to be better. They will have played West Virginia and Houston on the road, and those will be two really good games to teach a lot of these guys. You know, they played some young guys, and it's just going to be good experience and good building more continuity within this team. For me, I'm offensive line, run blocking, little yikes that they weren't great. Like you look at the first half, right? 64 rushing yards on 13 carries. That's under 5 yards a carry against Tennessee Tech. Like that's not great. And the second half, it was kind of what you saw from Kansas defense last year where they wore down and then eventually they couldn't stop. That was worrisome for me. A little bit. And again, continuity and getting the feel for everything, you know, that'll help. But that for me was a little bit of okay, you got away with it against Tennessee Tech, but let's see what happens when you play that West Virginia front seven, which is scary.
Well, and one more thing on that too. I mean, in the interest of fairness, against a Power Five team, Devin Neal's not getting four carries.
For sure. Yeah, that's very
true. And you're not rotating those guys through to that extent that we saw last night. And so I think both of us are more commenting on, hey, exactly last night, like the execution, the things like that. Whereas you can look at it and say, well, okay, but KU wouldn't play Duke like that because Devin Neal is going to get 15-plus carries probably.
Yeah, that's fair.
You're not going to rotate through – your number seven linebacker as much against Duke as you did last night. And so those things should probably be pointed out too.
Yeah. I think that's a good point too. And again, continuity over time will help. Let's go here. talking about some fan support here. What do K fans need to see over the next 2 weeks to carry the attendance momentum in the Duke game? I think for me, it's competent football. You know, I was texting with some of my friends last night, kind of who watched the game, and they're talking about, you know, oh, this is great. And it's like, well, this is competent football. This is what a competent football program looks like, which I don't think KU fans are too used to seeing, honestly, in recent years. And this, they did what they're supposed to do in this game. Can they go to West Virginia and be competitive and be competent and not have a disastrous performance where they get blown out? Can you go to Houston? That's going to be really challenging. It's going to be hot. Houston's good. Can over these next 2 weeks, can they put together a competent product that at least builds some momentum in terms of feeling that the team is headed in the right direction and not doing a, you know, you blew out a bad team and then you take kind of two steps back. Like, can they just continue to kind of take steps in the right direction, right? Be, you know, make it a one score game against West Virginia, make it so fans are watching in the fourth quarter. Same thing against Houston. Maybe can you lead against Houston at some point in the game? You know, can it be a little bit like maybe the Duke game last year where you come out, start real hot, and then maybe carry it over in the second half and now you have more depth? I think in general, continuing to show that it's a competent product and a good product that fans want to watch, I think those are going to be the two big things.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that winning last night the way that they did also creates momentum.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And I think that a lot of people had a really good time last night. And I think that when we look at recent KU football history from an attendance standpoint, right, I feel like this fan base has really been yearning for competent football and has been for something to give them an indicator that, hey, this is going to happen. And I feel like every time maybe that step has been taken, fans have come out to Memorial, they haven't been rewarded for it. Right? And you look at, you know, the K-State game, what, again, in the Les Miles era, where you have that great turnout for that K-State game and fans are excited and they feel like, okay, like maybe this is it. Maybe we're turning the corner. And you go out and you aren't even competitive and the game is over pretty much, you know, from the word go. And it's not even that Kansas needed to win that game, but Kansas needed to show something in that game. You know, if Kansas had lost to K-State in that game, say 24-17 or something like that, I think you would have continued to see that momentum build. But because, you know, they were like, well, I went to Memorial Stadium and this is what I saw, this was my experience, that hurt. And so I agree with you 100%. Like, they want to see, you know, against West Virginia and Houston, they want to see the clues that, hey, this isn't like every other year. But I also think that last night's game, with having the 35,000 fans there who had a good experience, who saw Kansas looking like it did, I think that, you know, improved the momentum, you know, maybe even considerably from that as well.
Yep, I agree. I think it's what it's going to take. And I think you're right. Also, those uniforms in 2019 made fans want to leave early too, I bet. Those were awful. All right, let's wrap up here. Quick hit, West Virginia. Did you watch the Backyard Brawl on Thursday?
I watched it after the fact. So I was with Ryan Wallace, you know, from our Kansas State site, over at the Lawrence High School game, checking them out in Olathe South. Olathe South actually pulled off the upset and won 36-32. And Olathe South has one of the top players in the state in Jordan Allen, who is a guy that, you know, was a KU target and everything. And so we went over and watched that. I can tell you, phones were out checking the score and everything.
It was crazy.
As that game was going on, and came back home and I had it recorded. And it was fascinating because I'm not sure either West Virginia or Pitt, if you were to pour Cruz serum down both programs' throats, would say that they played well. And West Virginia still, within the framework of that, put itself in position to win, and then just disaster struck with the pick six and everything else. I think one of the things that stood out just real quick was JT Daniels didn't play especially well. He was hurt by wide receiver drops, I thought, too. But that was one of the things I was looking at, because I feel like West Virginia's got a really good front seven. Mm-hmm. I think West Virginia can run the ball with the guys that they have, and you know, the big back that they had against Pittsburgh, Donaldson looked terrific.
Yeah.
The question for me is, can West Virginia throw the ball well enough to get people out? And in previous years, that's been a multifaceted problem for West Virginia, because they haven't pass protected well. Like 2 years ago, I think they led the nation in dropped passes. And, you know, obviously they didn't get terrific quarterback play there either, but it was all three things working together. And I think all of us thought JT Daniels, with his ability, with the way he's played at certain times, you know, at Georgia and USC, I think you felt like the quarterback problem, I don't want to say it was solved, but there was a chance that they were going to play better at that position. Hmm. You wondered, could they protect him? And would the receivers, you know, do him more favors this year? It's one game, but I think that was one of the standouts to me, is I'm not entirely sure that passing game has maybe jumped to the level that they had hoped that it would.
Interesting. I don't really agree. Like, I think JT was pretty good. You know, obviously he doesn't throw the ball in like a rope, like an NFL quarterback, like you see in college. But I thought his deep field accuracy was pretty good, and I just thought his wide receivers just kind of let him down. And I am interested to see those wide receivers against KU's defensive backs, because that's just gut instinct feels like that's a mismatch, because those guys are
huge. Lead guy is really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some guys, but yeah, I mean, it's JT wasn't as sharp, I think, as I thought he would be, but no, I mean, it'll be interesting to watch for sure. And I think too, that front seven against Kansas's run game, and it's, you look at the game from last year, just looking at West Virginia generally, and Kansas loses that game by a score. Kansas didn't have any running backs in that game. I mean, nobody was healthy. You know, Devin Neal had gotten hurt the previous week against TCU. Hyshaw was out for the year. Obviously, Savion Morrison and Kai Thomas were playing for other schools, so they were not there. And I think when you look at West Virginia and Kansas coming out of that game, this game is obviously in Morgantown. It's a hostile environment. It's not an easy place to win. But I'm not entirely sure that you can't say that even with the addition of JT Daniels, that Kansas didn't do more to improve this offseason from last year's matchup than West Virginia did. And I think that's one of the things that makes this game interesting.
Yeah, obviously to watch. I think there's a few matchups that just – I'm interested to write about this week, because I think obviously the trenches will be fascinating, because Pitt's got some dudes, and made West Virginia look bad. And I wonder, you know, how bad is West Virginia? Was that a more of a, you know, does that speak to how good Pitt was? Does that speak to how bad West Virginia? I don't know. So we'll have to see this week. But all righty, Kevin, that'll do it. Thank you as always for jumping on the podcast with us.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good time. And the Kansas Jayhawks are tied at the top of the Big 12. So, you know, it is a solid week one result for the Jayhawks.
Yeah, I got a question about the expanded playoffs, but I think we'll have to wait a little bit until later in the season to hit that one when KU's 11-0.
I did get a Jalen Daniels Heisman Trophy question was overheard on the walk back to the car last night.
Oh, I love that. I love week one overreactions. It's great.
Oh, sure. Sure.
As always, stay tuned to fog.net for all sorts of KU basketball and KU football and recruiting coverage. If you like what you heard on the podcast, please leave it a rating and review. If you're watching on YouTube, head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Subscribe. If you're listening on the podcast platforms, head over to YouTube. Got a lot of YouTube content we're doing as well. And thank you as always for listening. We'll talk to you guys again later this week to preview the West Virginia game.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.